Another name for Iraq is the cradle of civilization. That's because an area of vast wetlands in southern Iraq, at the confluence of the Tigris and Euphrates River, is considered by some scholars to be the Garden of Eden. During the first Gulf War, Saddam Hussein began draining 2,000 square miles of these wetlands in an attempt to rout rebels hiding there. Most of the people living in the area fled, and the once massive marsh lost more than 90% of its original size. But since the fall of Baghdad, the great marshlands of Mesopotamia have started to come back. Joining me is Azam Alwash, a civil engineer and founder of Eden Again, one of several groups helping to restore the marshlands. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell me why you care so much about this place? Why is it so unusual?
Steve, I grew up in and around the marshes. As a young man, I used to accompany my father in his frequent visits into the various hamlets or between the various hamlets trying to resolve water disputes. And that experience has basically has not left me. It's with me and has been with me for the last 25, 30 years, having left Iraq in 1978. Since coming to this country, or when I was living in the United States, I was an avid kayaker, and I used to tell my wife, wait until Iraq is liberated. We'll go kayak in this heaven on earth, this magical place called the Ahwar, the marshes of southern Iraq. If you spend a couple hours there, you just can't help but fall in love with the place, where nature and man have become integrated into one, where man has affected the evolution of the system, and the system has affected the growth of this water culture. The Sumerian way of life still exists today. The people of the marshes are still using the same skills that they have used for 7,000 years to survive this environment. It's a magical place.
What did it look like at its worst point after this diversion and draining?
I visited the area for the first time in 25 years in June of 2003, just right after the liberation of Iraq. And instead of these rivers of water and these mountains of reeds, what I saw was dry, desiccated land that extended as far as the eye can see with desert plants, zur, or what's called tamarax in the scientific name, everywhere. Instead of these reed beds, instead of the hamlets, I saw platforms where bricks that formerly were houses or reeds that have been burnt existed. There was no life. There's no fish. There's no water. There's no human beings. It was a desert.
Can you describe for me what the marshes look like now?
The people of the marshes, as the troops were going up north, Baghdad had not fallen yet, began breaking the dikes and the control structures that held the water away from these marshes, and they started returning the water to their marshes as early as the second week of April. And as it turns out, by their action, they had essentially saved me a big step. One of the major steps that I thought I was going to have to take is to try to convince the Iraqi people that, in fact, the marshes need to be restored. Well, that war need not be fought. People were actually eager to return to the marshes. And by their own actions, they actually told us which part of the marshes they want to restore first, because they, in fact, voted with their own hands, if you will. Nature is an incredible force. You know, we were worried that it's going to take a long time for the restoration to take place. As it happens, in southern Iraq, all you need to do is introduce water. I'll grant you that it's not just as simple as reintroducing water, but the introduction of water has caused reeds to grow back. People have started moving back in. What is our major challenge at this point is how to make sure that the areas that have been inundated or flooded continue to thrive.
What are some of the keys that you've found to restoration? What does nature do, and how might you have to help nature where the restoration process isn't going so well?
What we have learned is that the marshes evolved around this idea of the fresh pulse of water coming in, timed in the spring with the snow melts in the mountains of Iraq and Turkey. This fresh pulse of water comes in just about as we speak right now, between February and April or May. And you have 60% of the water resources that goes into Iraq used to come into Iraq during these 3 months. So every year, there is this brackishness that accumulates in the water, and then there is this pulse of flood water that comes in the spring, just as the reeds come back from dormancy, just as the fish swims back from the Gulf into the marshes to spawn, just as the birds are migrating. This whole cycle of nature kind of timed to recreate the cycle of life starting in the spring.
What about the source of water for this marshland? The headwaters, of course, of the Euphrates aren't in Iraq, but across the border in Turkey. And I gather there's some tensions there. How do you think this situation can be resolved?
For complete restoration, for making sure that we will have these marshes forevermore and our great-great-great-grandchildren can enjoy this place, we need to reach an agreement between Turkey, Iraq, Iran, and Syria about the equitable sharing of the waters of the Tigris and Euphrates. What I am advocating at this point in time with the Iraqi government is that they need to reach discussions with Turkey, and they need to move from their existing position. The existing position of the Iraqi government is that we have a historical right for the water of the Tigris and Euphrates because we were the first developers of the water resources of that area. However, if we insist on this position, we are going to end up with discussions for 50 years without reaching a solution. What I'm suggesting to Iraq is that they should buy electricity from Turkey. If they buy electricity from Turkey, then water is going to have to be released from these dams and to generate electricity. And we get electricity at a reasonable price with the water as a byproduct. That is quite possible, actually. This is not dream talk. Turkey wants to join the European Union, and one of the conditions of accession to the Union is that they have to resolve the water disputes between Turkey, Syria, and Iraq.
Now, you said that the restoration of the marsh is really a symbol that life after Saddam Hussein can be better. To what extent has that been realized?
I can take you on a tour of Kermashia area and Chibayish area and show you the returning refugees who have come back from Iran.
These people were marsh Arabs who, some of them were systematically exterminated by Saddam Hussein, and those who stayed alive were, in jail, tortured, fled over the border to Iran? Is that who you're talking about?
All of the above. 70,000 people had gone to Iran in 92, 93, 94. About 30,000 came to the United States as refugees. A lot of them were internally displaced. And, of course, the mass graves stand as silent reminders to us of the fate of many of those who did not listen to the central government and wanted freedom.
So what are the odds of getting a meaningful restoration of the marshes of southern Iraq, or, as you folks would say, the original Eden?
The restoration has already started. We have 30 to 40% of the marshes that existed in 1990 alive and well today. So it's a reality. Our goal, obviously our final goal, is to restore the marshes or return as much as possible. Getting it all back is rather not possible. Realistically speaking, I would say if we return to 1990 conditions, we are 100% successful, and I'm about 90% sure that we can get back to 1990.
Azam Alwash started the project Eden Again. Thanks so much for taking this time with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, should the EPA regulate carbon dioxide on the grounds global warming is a health hazard? A federal court is to decide. Keep listening to Living on Earth.